Welcome to Kotaku Split Screen, the show where we talk about video games one very excruciatingly specific topic at a time. I'm your host for this week, Ethan Gatch, and joining me today are my co-hosts, Mike Fahey and Lisa Marie.
Wow, did you have to look us up?
No, I just I forgot if you guys like chime in and be like, you know, say your names or not. It's a weird hang-up. Anyway, I can do that again.
No, it's okay. We're going to stick with this. Not now. It's just going to be you introduce us, there's an awkward silence, and then it sounds like you're trying to remember our names. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm an imposter. Who is this? Who is this podcast again?
Is it Fortnite? You're an imposter? Like Fortnite? Don't. Lisa Marie rolled her eyes.
There needs to be a video component just for my reactions.
So we'll get there. Now that I can sit up in a fixed bed, we'll eventually get me on video too. But I will be an anime cat.
Now, Mike, you've talked a lot about your new bed, and it sounds a lot like a Metroidvania. The topic of today's show, it's a space you have to traverse every day and now know intimately, but can also be somewhat confining.
Is that, wow.
Is that the definition of a Metroidvania? I don't know. I think we should, I actually want to ask you two.
We should know that.
When you guys think of Metroidvania, what do you think of?
I think of this impending doom of games I feel like I need to play and haven't yet. There are a lot of Metroidvanias on my to-do list that I haven't gotten to. So I just feel anxiety when I think of them. I don't know if that's a genre definition, but that is what I think of when I think of Metroidvanias.
No, I think that's very, I mean, I definitely have that feeling. Like, I think there's Metroidvania as it exists within like a genre you can look up on Wikipedia. And then there's like, when people talk to me about Metroidvanias, it's like, hey, there's like 5 dozen of these games that came out in the last 10 years and all of them are great and you should try them all. And it's like, I don't know if I can do that. Mike, what about you?
Well, for me, a Metroidvania is part Metroid, but also part Vania.
Shut up.
If we shut up, we wouldn't have a podcast. It'd be ruined. No, I mean, it's for me, what defines a Metroidvania is basically any game where you're going to an area and you go, oh, crap, I can't get through that area until I get a thing. And the anxiety that brings up for me as well is like, oh, crap, I need to be a mist vampire to get through that. Or, oh, no, that's somehow I'm going to get small or learn how to slide. And keeping track of all that is what gets me, is knowing when you get a new power, like going, oh, crap, where could I have used this? Let me look at this giant map. That's what a Metroidvania is to me.
Yeah, it's almost like it's like reading a book with a ton of footnotes, and you're like, oh, God. You flip to the footnote, and the footnote itself is like as long as the chapter, and you're like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. The thing about Metroidvanias is, all right, Metroid comes out from Nintendo in 1986, and it's a side-scrolling game where you can backtrack and travel through all these different tunnels and get new abilities, like you were saying, that help you reach new areas. Mm-hmm. Castlevania comes out, I think, 2 months or a month after Metroid, and is using a very similar formula. I know diehards are like, it should just be called Metroid. Like, the game should just be called Metroid. There's no reason to call it Metroidvania. I'm curious, do either of you feel like, or do either of you have a specific passion for Castlevania, or feel like there is something unique that part of the descriptor is talking about?
No, but I think that as much as technicalities come into play, it just sounds better. And when using something colloquially enough, that's a big part of it. Like, what makes something catch on? Like, it's a Metroid, like, that's boring. Metroidvania sounds fun.
It does sound fun. It feels like I'm hanging out in the city with my friends in a suit of armor, with a giant cannon on my arm. I know, for the Castlevania part, for me, isn't like when I think of Castlevania, the first game that comes to mind is Symphony of the Night, which was basically, that's the penultimate or the ultimate. It's the ultimate Metroidvania for me. That's what I think of. Like when I said, oh, I've got to be gas or I've got to be a bat. I mean, that's the game I think of whenever I play a Metroidvania, and I'm like, oh, remember Symphony, remember that game? Because that was a good game. Castlevania. Yeah, so that, yeah, go ahead.
It's not what penultimate means.
I know.
real time editing over here. Yeah. I do think like Symphony of the Night is in a lot of ways the sort of, while Metroid gets a lot more, I feel like, popular attention in part because of Nintendo, I feel like if anything, the Metroid formula is a bit more specific, and there is something that tends to be claustrophobic and sort of survival-y about it, and it's much more about like navigating tight spaces and trying to survive, you know, through various traps. Whereas like Symphony of the Night is kind of feels like more of a sort of a holistic side scroller that happens to have a lot of those elements, but also I feel like is doing a lot more in terms of like the combat feel and the boss fights. And actually I think about this a lot only because, you know, there's a Joshua Rivera wrote a great piece for us in the like single year that he worked at Kotaku. That was basically like, shut up about Metroidvanias. Like it's a dumb word. Please stop using it. And on the one hand, I completely am sympathetic because like you look at The Legend of Zelda came out the same year as Metroid and is basically doing all the same things. Like there's a contiguous map that you are exploring and you collect new items that allow you to get to places you couldn't have previously, except it's top down instead of side scrolling. And it almost feels like in a lot of ways, Metroid, while there's tons of differences, it basically takes that and just turns it, you know, flat
on its side.
Right. Like literally. And at the same time, and so on the one hand, it feels like, all right, Metroidvania is basically like any side scrolling game that has a continuous map that almost all, I mean, games in general tend to have a progression where past places, anything that lets you backtrack will have stuff that's gated until you get other things along, whether to stretch out content or because it's fun to discover. And yet at the same time, so on the one hand, it feels like every game has Metroidvania elements to it almost. That's an exaggeration. Like tons of games don't. Civilization doesn't, but like a lot of this sort of general arcadey exploration action games. But on the other hand, when someone says like, oh, this new indie game is a Metroidvania, I'm like, okay, I know exactly what you mean. Like on the one hand, it feels like a completely ambiguous, unspecific genre definition, but at the same time, like I can use it with friends or random people and I feel like I'm never confused about what any of us are talking about. Agree or disagree? You know, do you think that there's like, is that basically what a Metroidvania is? Do you think there's like something people don't get about it?
I think there are a lot of nuances that people argue. So, like, does everything meet, like, every specific criteria, or is it... I think Dead Cells is a good example. I would definitely consider it a Metroidvania, but there are others that I think are like, no, it's too different, especially because it's, like, a roguelite, and...
Oh, God.
The map is a little different. What?
Oh, roguelikes. Roguelites are a trigger.
I feel like Metroidvania, roguelikes, and souls-likes are like the three. Oh, like, God. There's so much baggage attached to them. Mm-hmm. But I completely agree, Lisa Marie, that like there's a, it is, you, it's like you can start doing this sort of how many angels on the top of a pin when you get into the nitty gritty of these games.
Fahey, are you okay? Did we hurt you talking about roguelikes and souls-likes?
My opinion towards roguelites, and my penultimate opinion towards no, it's changed. It has changed. I recently gotten into Hades after all this time of every single episode of Split Screen before you guys came along was basically, I think, just Nathan and Ash telling me to play Hades. And then they left, and I'm like, okay, I'll play Hades now. Ha, ha, ha. So I'm getting into it. I'm starting to like it. It's just the idea of going through and progressing and then dying and losing everything and having to do it all over again. Something in my mind's like, why? Why am I doing this? But if you mix in other elements, like Metroidvania elements, I get confused enough to actually enjoy myself. So, which is kind of what happened with... the game you were just talking about, Dead Cells. It does enough hand waving over here to other things to get me to go, oh yeah, this is fun. I can't wait to get back in there with more weapons and more power and get some stuff. Ha ha.
Yeah, I think that this whole like, is it one or the other, and not acknowledging that it's both and even beyond those two genres as well, and for other games as well, really discredits it. I don't think these genres are as either or as some people like to think that they are. And that's when we get a lot of the discourse around what is or isn't a Metroidvania that just gets really exhausting. But yeah, exactly that. All of those elements combined make it so that you feel like you're progressing and there's a reason you're dying repeatedly.
Yeah, there's so actually an interesting sort of connection to that. I've recently played and reviewed Axiom Verge 2 for the site. And on the one hand, it is like hopelessly a love letter to the Metroidvania genre. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it like very early on upends a lot of your expectations around what that kind of formula is. And it's almost much more of a puzzle exploration game than it is your sort of traditional, like, here's the Metroidvania map and here's your upgrades and arcade action and you're going to sort of like blast your way through it. So Axiom Verge 1 came out in 2015. I think it was like a sort of like second or third wave of indie darlings that were very traditional, riffing on traditional formulas. And it was like very much like from the art style down, and the weapon systems, like extremely, this is a fan Metroid. Did either of you play that?
Yeah, I played it for the site. I don't know if I reviewed it or just wrote impressions for it about it, but I loved it. I loved every friggin' minute of Axiom Verge. There were some weird bits with the big computer lady, but no, I loved it. It gave me a weird System Shock vibe while still being clearly Metroid love letter through and through.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet. We were talking about it at the site because, you know, the sequel's coming out. And so I have the code for the sequel, which I want to dive into. And just talking about it more made me really want to play the first one. I was also just graduating college when the first one came out and starting to work full time. So it is like this really sad period in my gaming history where I just have way too much shit to do. And so I am not able to play a lot of those things. And I always find it really fun to go back and play like stuff from a time when either I was too young to play, I was too busy, or what have you. So Axiom Verge 2 coming out has been like, all right, let's do this now. Now is the time. That's a very long way of saying, no, I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, I played it when it came out. I never finished the first one initially. I had to go back a couple years later. Because I really liked it. And on the one hand, Metro games, like the series, had always sort of intimidated me because of the survival element and just like the constant tension of knowing that I was trying to survive until I could get the upgrade so that whenever I respawned somewhere, I would have that upgrade and then I could go in the other direction and like explore a new area. And I think the first Axiom Verge was a lot more forgiving, but also sort of still... It kind of fit the definition you were talking about in the beginning, Lisa Marie, where it's like, this is a game where everyone's like, oh yeah, you should totally play this. Like it's, extremely like fun and nostalgic. And it was, but, at the same time, like there wasn't necessarily a hook there to kind of keep me going through it when other stuff was coming out. Axiom Verge 2 does have that hook, but unfortunately, in my opinion, it's like in the second half of the game. So unlike the first game, you don't have guns in Axiom Verge 2. You have a pickaxe and or other melee weapons, and you have a hacking ability that lets you hack robots because the overworld is filled with robots and you can hack them to disable them, to make them work for you, to attack other enemies, to make them explode, to bring down their defenses. But it's very much this sort of like, there's almost this, they're alerted to your presence when you appear. And it is hard to be stealthy, but there is basically this sort of like almost, Horizon Zero Dawn element of navigating around them more as obstacles than as enemies to defeat. So like in a traditional Metroidvania, like my instinct is to just kill everything on screen and then explore. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, you really, that's a recipe for being extremely frustrated and dying a ton. And so you actually, most of the game is really about exploring, trying to get past them and getting new abilities. One of which is a drone robot that can use a portal to go to another dimension called the Breach. And that's the real trick of Axiom Verge 2 is that there's this whole second map that is overlaid on the first one that you can teleport back and forth between. And so in addition to just getting new abilities that help you climb a ledge or like blow up rocks blocking a tunnel or whatever, you're also navigating this whole second set of secret passageways that comes from like, well, here I am in this part of the map. I need to get over to this part, but maybe there's not a direct through line. But if I go through the breach and find a shortcut there, maybe that's how I get over there. And so it actually kind of like, you know, it in a way, it's very mind fucky, but it on the second end of the half of the game, which is also when you get fast travel and a lot of other abilities that sort of make the what I consider to be not very good combat that make exploring a little more fun and frictionless, it just becomes something I think really special.
What's interesting is, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Metroid Dread, which is coming out, also have a lot of like that hacking and different ways of taking on enemies as well, or it's supposed to?
It does. I don't know if, Mike, did you play through Metroid Fusion or some of the other, I don't know, they're not spin-offs, but.
I'm so sorry. You found my blind spot. No, I have not played a lot of Metroid. I played the original. I played Super Metroid. I played through some of the Primes. But I'm not, like, I didn't play the newer one that came out. That was, who did that one? Other M, I didn't play. Yeah. I didn't play. I haven't played much of anything since Other M, really. So, sadly, no.
Yeah, so the Dread trailers seem to have, there's definitely a lot of hacking abilities. There's a camouflage system, like you can turn invisible, because the whole, one of the premises is that there's these cyborgs, I don't know if they're cyborgs or robots or androids, but that are on this planet and they've gone haywire and they're hunting you down. And so they'll come looking for you and you can try to stealth, like, you know, hide from them to get until they go away. There's that sort of alien isolation, like in a similar way that I'm kind of describing Axe Converge, like they're, at least early on, they're sort of pitched in the marketing as being like obstacles to avoid rather than like mini bosses to try and beat immediately. And so, yeah, there definitely does seem like they're, it seems like their Metroid Dread is similarly trying to like change up, like still the continuous side scrolling map, still the Metroid upgrades, but like change how you engage with the environment to be maybe a little more like the Metroid Prime series, which felt a bit more Resident Evil-y. I don't know. Maybe that might be completely unfair, but
more adventure-y.
Yes. So yeah, Axe Converge 2 definitely, it, I mean, there's going to be a third one. I mean, both games were made by Tom Happ, who like some, he had a business and publishing team for this second game, but it's definitely primarily almost all the work done by him, which is just an amazing feat in its own right. Not because he did it all, but also it is, you know, it all looks and sounds and plays extremely well, in my opinion. But I think it's interesting. I would like to see more of these sort of indie Metroidvanias try and take, like, figure out what they think the core one or two elements of a Metroidvania game should be, but then completely ditch the rest and try to do something new. And that sounds like a good time to take a break before we go on to talking about our own personal favorite Metroidvanias. So we'll be right back after the break.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, so you guys just heard me talk and ramble for a long time, but I'm curious, so Lisa Marie, let's start with you. What's your favorite Metroidvania, or if you don't have a favorite, the one that is sort of most appealing to you?
I think it would have to be Dead Cells, which I was talking about earlier, just because, like I said, a lot of Metroidvanias are just this backlog source of anxiety. I mean, I've also dabbled with, like, both Ori games and a couple others, but Dead Cells is the one that I think really got me hooked and got me into just that entire style of playing. I feel like it wasn't one that I had played a lot, just in terms of more side scrollers, more roguelites, roguelikes. I always forget the difference between the two. that'll be a future episode. And Metroidvanias in general. I feel like I tend to go for more 3D action-y games or, you know, as I've talked about, like simulation games or things where I can, like, make a spreadsheet on everything I need. But that's one where it's like, well, you can't really make a spreadsheet and say, I'm going to get this because you don't know what you're going to get. And being able to go back and not know exactly where you need to go back to, all of these things are really fun. And it's definitely the one that I've played the most and just really fell in love with, that entire world of gaming, which I hadn't let myself enjoy as much. So I definitely recommend it. It's so fun and such a joy to play. And everything else just gives me anxiety because I haven't played it enough.
And so, Mike, then, what's your favorite Metroidvania?
My favorite Metroidvania. Now, it's weird because I've been looking through lists of Metroidvanias in preparation for this episode. And I'm amazed at how many games that I don't even really consider a Metroidvania when I play them are technically within the boathouse, the wheelhouse, the penultimate wheelhouse. I'm never going to stop saying penultimate. The Shantae series.
If you don't stop, I quit.
Really?
No.
No. All the Shantae series that I play. When I think of Shantae, I think, oh, it's just a platformer, blah, blah, blah. I'm side-scrolling platformer. But really, she gets magical powers as she goes through her adventures. She'll get like a monkey that can climb walls, and all of a sudden you're getting to new places. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. All of Shantae is a goddamn Metroidvania. Gosh darn Metroidvania, for those of you who hate when I say goddamn. Apologize for saying it again. I think one of the ones I played recently that I really loved was Time Spinner, which kind of had Ethan, you were describing Axiom Verge 2 as having kind of an alternate world where you could go and travel. And Time Spinner has the past and the future, where, like, you go back into the past and an obstacle might not be there. Or you have a special ability that if you go in the past, you can burn some weeds or something. It's been a while since I played. But that one I loved a lot. More recently, but less complex, a game called Gato Roboto, which came out, I believe it was, it's on the Xbox One as well. So I played it on the Switch. It's from Doinksoft and Devolver Digital. And it's basically a one-bit game, they call it, where you're just this little cat. You crash land, your human crash lands on a planet. And you have a cat named Kiki who has to rescue him. And she hops into a mech suit. And it's definitely one of those love letters to Metroid. She's got the giant mech shoulders and the arm cannon and this little cat head poking out the top. And it's the cutest little thing. But it uses one-bit graphics, and it's basically like the essence of a Metroid. I don't even want to say Metroidvania because it's so Metroid-y. But you can leave the outfit, you can leave the armor, and wander about as the cat, all defenseless, to get to certain areas. And that is a whole lot of fun for a very uncomplicated visually. I mean, it's black and white, and I even have the Gato Roboto suit for Fall Guys. That's how dedicated I am to this stupid little Metroidvania game.
Did you ever review it for the site?
I wrote about it for the site, I believe. Let me make sure. I'm going to type. People hear me type. Gato Roboto Kotaku. It sounds like an old Styx lyric. Oh my gosh, yes, we did. We called it Meowtroid Catsylvania.
This is, we've become a crossover podcast episode. favorite cat Metroids.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. No, I called it Meowtroid. I called it Meowtroid Catsylvania. That's the headline. Either way, Gato Roboto is excellent. And I got a really great gif of the cat fighting the mouse boss.
So I was really hoping you would mention one of the Ori games. Can you just talk really quickly? I'm really curious because I've never really played a ton of them. But people love them and swear by them, and they're considered Metroidvanias. I'm curious, where you see them riffing on that genre.
They are indeed. In fact, there was another one of the ones that I didn't, you know, I think about Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori and the Will of the Wisps as kind of their own thing, because they've got such a unique vibe, and the between the music and the art style, and my God, the music's swelling in my head right now. That's how much Ori I've played. I've played both games on three different consoles or two different consoles. But yeah, it is. It is that you gain new abilities as you go, and like the ability to swim underwater, or you clear out. Let's see, one of the early missions in the first game, you have to purify the water coming out of this tree, or unlock it, so it comes and cleans all the stagnant water out of the land, and suddenly you can go underwater. In the second game, there's a point where you earn the ability to kind of drill through sand. And that opens up all sorts of new areas. What I love about the Ori games is there's so many little collectibles and little powers to unlock that it's one of those really easy to try to 100% or get caught up in trying to get everything.
Right.
I mean, when I reviewed Ori and the Will of the Wisps for the site, I think by the time I finished, I was 98% complete when I was writing the review. It might have been a few dots less. And that never happens, because when I review a game for the site, I do some of the side stuff, but I really want to get to the end and get the experience, the total experience as one would get from the beginning to the end. But Ori had me just hopping all over the place. And yeah, I'll get to the review soon, but there's a map piece that I don't have yet, and an excellent use of that. And it's more subtle in Ori, the way they build the world. It's not, you can't straight up say, okay, I'm going to this area and gosh, I'm blocked. And it's not as obvious what you'd need to do to get through. And it's just, you get to a point in the game and go, wait a minute, I've just unlocked a whole new area, a whole new world that I didn't. Oh, that's what those things are for. That sort of deal.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like Dust and Elysian Tale was another indie from like the mid 2010s was similar in that respect.
Yeah. I have that developer's art on my arm.
Wow.
That's
and yet you have not mentioned.
Well, I didn't actually play that much Dust. I have his art from his Jazz Jackrabbit days.
Oh, okay.
My Jazz Jackrabbit tattoo is actually that game developer's art.
That's awesome.
Dust is great. Dust was beautiful. It got a lot of flack as the furry game, though, because, well, I mean, it's the furry leading game.
Yeah, no, it was. It's definitely one of those games. It's like a RPG Maker art style game where you're like, everything about this game is clicking for me, except there's something a bit just like not, I don't know. And that's definitely one of those games where I'm like, okay, I can just, I'm not super into furry stuff, but I was like, all right, I'll just bracket that part. And, you know, the rest of the game, you can kind of enjoy it whether or not, because there is a very deep, like, mythological story you can get into.
Yeah, Dean Dodrill.
Yes.
That is his name. I didn't want to go through the podcast without knowing Dean's name.
I think that was like similar. I feel like that came out before Axiom Verge, but it was a similar sort of like one person did the majority, lion's share of the entire game.
Oh yeah, at least yeah, it was all his. It was came out Xbox Live Arcade in 2012, actually.
So
it's been around for a while. Well, so is Dean Dodrill.
So I don't know if I have a favorite Metroidvania. I was going through the similar list. I'm really glad you mentioned Time Spinner. I think that's really an underrated game just in general. I think like, I feel like that doesn't have a super grabby art style or presentation. Cause you know, you look at some indie games and you see like, okay, there's a very defined look here and that distinguishes it enough that people kind of like maybe dig in a little more and see what it is. And it also didn't have a bunch of marketing behind it, but like the game is like, honestly, it's almost like if you made, It almost feels like if the Chrono Trigger devs made a Metroidvania spinoff.
Yes, exactly. Oh my God, that's a perfect comparison.
And it almost sounds over promising, but like it's really good. And that is, I don't know. Maybe you wrote about it for the site at some point, but that definitely, I think I actually saw people tweeting about it recently because Wario 64 account was giving you deals on games. He goes through like tweets like 20 deals in the middle of the night, and then like that was one of the games, and people were debating whether or not it was more like Symphony of the Night or like Mega Man X.
Oh yeah, our headline for the impressions I wrote about it back on the 2019 new Switch games like Symphony. Shut up, all of you! I can't say Symphony.
You're doing great.
New Switch game is like Symphony of the Night with JRPG graphics. That was not my choice of headlines. We have editors who help us with headlines sometimes.
What are you trying to say?
They're trying to figure out their best to make people care about this indie game.
We had different editors in 2019 who might not have been as good.
What are you trying to say? Okay.
Yeah, so our new editors are so good. Our headlines are so catchy. But back then it was like, really? This is what you want me to put there? Okay.
So I struggle. I don't really have a favorite Metroidvania. I mean, I think Super Metroid is still, if not the gold standard for Metroidvania games, I think it's still the one using that formula that I enjoy the most, mostly because it's just so sinister and sort of like, I just love the vibe of the game. And there's few Metroidvanias where I just can enjoy being in the world with, unless I'm progressing. But that one, it is like, it's just sort of fun to like move around. And I think it's just some of the best presented, even though again, like I hate the combat in that game and it drives me up the wall. And honestly, it terrifies me in a way. Cause I'm like, oh, this is just so, there's few games where I'm terrified of dying because it's like, well, I'll just keep playing. That's just the normal course of playing a game. But for some reason that one still to this day. But so I was looking through a list of like other ones, Salt and Sanctuary, which is, I think some people consider more of a Souls-like, but it's basically a Metroidvania-style mm-hmm. world, but with a Souls system. I guess a Souls?
Hey, Metroid Souls? System.
Yeah.
Where'd you go? Okay.
So we'd probably be remiss if we didn't mention Hollow Knight. I think that's one of...
Oh, Hollow Knight.
There was definitely a phase of Kotaku's staff where that was like the game that they couldn't stop talking about, and I was never one of those people. I got into it for like 5 hours and it never really grabbed me in the same way.
Same.
I think partly it's really is a more of a combat focused game than it is an exploration focused game. But it's still, I mean, remarkable, beautiful world. Lisa Marie, have you ever played it?
No, that is one of the ones that kind of because what you're saying, I'm so scared to play certain games because people hype them up so much. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but what if I don't like it? What does that say about me? And it doesn't say anything, but like I'm insecure. So I'm like, do I have bad opinions? I don't know. And I'm worried about, will I like it enough? Will it live up to it? Am I setting my expectations the right way because I've heard so much about it? And it's just one of those things that even with Ori, like I started it and then I didn't finish because I was just like overwhelmed by the lore behind it. And with Hollow Knight, I didn't even start it for that reason. No.
There was a period of time when Stephen, our former editor-in-chief, Stephen Totillo, would not stop talking about Hollow Knight.
He also will not stop talking about Assassin's Creed, though, so...
Yeah, so there's no accounting for taste. But I think, no, actually, Patricia, our current editor-in-chief, was also really into Hollow Knight. And we had that whole, there was a year where we did our, it might have been 2019, when we did our Game of the Years and we were having debates. And Hollow Knight had come out like the year before, but it had just come out on consoles. And there was a big argument over, well, does it count since it came out on consoles? Can it be a Game of the Year this year since we missed it the last year? And oh my God, I still have nightmares about those conversations. Like someone goes, what about Hollow Knight? And I'm like, I'm out.
Yep. Do not miss that at all. Although honestly now I've just been like, sure. Yeah. All right. People like it. Put it on there. I mean, there's always going to be a certain, I think Kotaku, even just as a site, there's a certain console bias, at least for certain genres of game. And so like the people who most were like into or potentially could have been into Hollow Knight probably wouldn't have heard about it until it came to Switch and console. And so I think it probably the list would have served its purpose well just to be like, hey, this game just came out recently to platforms you might have access to and you should totally check it out. But yeah, I think we should take our best cracks at maybe trying to rename the Metroidvania genre, since that name has caused so much conflict and pain over the decades. But we'll do that right after this next break.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, so I'm honestly a defender of the Metroidvania name, but I also think that, like, there's a lot of criticism just of, like, what the heck does it even mean at this point? But I also think it's interesting, like, when you talk to people about music and you say, like, rock and roll, like, people, all right, people have a general sense of what that is. But you talk about games to people who are not, like, obsessively reading forums or debating stuff in the comments, and you say Metroidvania, and they're like, what? There's shooter is probably the most prolific in terms of, like, you ask your average person on the street, like, the survey says, what are the top five game genres that people could name? But
shooter, platformer, puzzle, or RPG.
Sim.
What?
Yeah, like simulation. Sims, I guess sim. Yeah. Yeah. It's like strategy game.
Yeah.
But so, like, do you? All right. So who wants to take a first crack at renaming Metroidvania?
See, the issue with me lies with the fact that we're using the name of a game to describe a genre of game, which feels like you need some extra information. Shooter is, you know, you're shooting things. That's pretty self-explanatory. I go to my mom and say, I'm going to go play a shooter video game. She might have a general idea of what I'm talking about, or she might be like, why are you telling me this? We barely talk as it is. Why would you tell me this one thing? No, my mom and I talk all the time. Shout outs to my mom, who just found out she's lung cancer free.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Apparently they all this left is scar tissue, and she's really happy.
That's great.
She wouldn't know what a Metroidvania is, and so she's pretty useless. Sorry. We need to come up with a name for the genre that doesn't reflect a game, so we don't have to explain what Metroid is. I kind of like the idea of, and I know this is a name of another game, but it can also, shut up, don't laugh, like a Pathfinder. Pathfinder is the name of a game, name of an RPG system, but it's also the name of a job, an ancient adventurer job.
And a car.
That's a Nissan Pathfinder. Oh my goodness, so many things named Pathfinder, but that's fine because there's also the Nissan Shooter and the Nissan RPG, which has big spikes on top of it and a sword. Pathfinder is great because the whole idea is, you know, you're trying to find items to make your way through this area. You have to make a path. You have to find the items that will open up that path for you. And that's kind of like, that's what I would call them if people would listen to me and not just call them Metroidvanias and throw things at me.
I would never throw things at you, mostly because you live in a different state.
You could throw things in my direction, general direction, just south.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa Marie, what about you? First of all, how do you rate Fahey's suggestion?
I really like it. I think it is simple, easy to remember, just like I was saying about why Metroidvania? Why the Vania? I think it works. It has a good cadence. I like it. It makes sense. Good. I give it a B+.
Yay.
My suggestion.
Oh, here we go.
I'm going to choose to assume you are preparing for greatness.
I am. I'm putting on a special fancy hat. You can't see it.
Okay. My suggestion is the, oh shit, I forgot my wallet again, like. Because every time I leave my apartment, I will forget my phone, my keys, my mask, my bag, my water. I'm not kidding. I think the most gone back for things is 5 times. Like in one trip, trying to leave. And just that experience really reminds me of what it's like to play a Metroidvania. Just constantly being like, oh no, I can't actually do this until I have my keys. Oh, well, I can't go to the gym until I have my water bottle. You just got to keep going back and forth until you got everything you need. And then you can complete the journey.
Yeah. So the first time when you first mentioned that, I was like, thinking of it in terms of when you were talking earlier about not having time for all of these games and it being like an excuse, like, oh, I would love to play your Metroidvania, but I forgot my wallet at home. Sorry. but no, that makes a lot more sense in terms of like, because I think that's one of people who don't really like Metroidvanias a lot. I think one of the issues, in addition to the combat sometimes being grueling, is that it's just games that especially do it poorly are just constantly flaunting like, oh, here's this cool thing back here, but you can't have it yet. You got to go do this other thing first. And you like, especially when it's not just like you can see like, oh, I think there might be a hidden passageway here, but there's actually like the shiny upgrade or like health tank or whatever.
Sitting right there.
Like, oh, that's great. I could really use that right now, but I guess nope. Okay, thanks. Thanks, devs. Yeah.
And it's not an excuse. I have a disability. Leave me alone. This is bullying.
Wait, for leaving stuff at home?
It's ADHD for sure.
I mean, I leave stuff. I'm
definitely.
Have you
had to go back 5 times for one trip?
No, that's definitely.
That's brain stuff.
But yeah, I've actually lost my wallet so many times that the bank was like, "No, we're not sending you a new debit card. Sorry."
That bank sucks.
Wait, so you just don't have a debit card now?
I haven't had a debit card for a couple years now.
Oh no.
Can't lose it if you don't have it. I will say, so I struggle, like one of the map game is a new like descriptor, I think, that people toss around a lot when we talk about open world games, because open world games have some, like everything has sort of in this, especially in this last generation, tried to introduce open world elements and tried to chase that sort of like GTA Elder Scrolls style of like simulated map. But I think that it gets at the things you actually tend to do in some of those games very clearly in terms of like you have a map full of icons and you're trying to cross them off your list by going there and seeing what the thing is and solving that thing, usually either by killing someone or by, you know, putting on your scanner vision and finding clues. And so I was trying to think of like, what would that be the equivalent of for like a Metroidvania? Cause it is a sort of map game in a way. And I honestly could not think of anything. I like, it's like Pathfinder's very good, but it's
what would you grade Lisa Marie's? Ethan,
I would grade it an A+ for a review box. What, yes. Is this game that's like the perfect so Kotaku does you know, for our anyone in our large audience who has never visited the site or read a review before, we do these review boxes where I think one, I forget exactly what the terminology is.
Back of the box quote.
So there's back of the box quote, but then there's like the what type of game is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, genre type of game.
And like, it's supposed to, you know, you can sometimes, I feel like once upon a time, people tried to like both be either funny and or just accurate. But now it skews very much towards like making a joke of some kind. And the fallback joke is always usually some sort of sim. It's like, you know, the something, something sim. And so like, there's definitely like, I don't know. I guess maybe like a Metroidvania game would be like a getting lost type of game, but that's not really catchy. You can tell that I did not prepare for this assignment. I was listening to there's an episode of a podcast called whose name I'm now forgetting. But they were talking about you know, they're comparing video game genres to music genres and sort of like, you know, a lot of video game genres have verbs in them, like shooter, Pathfinder, like things that like can kind of like transcend the activity and sort of give, it's like, you know, what's the core verb of this game? Mm-hmm. I was talking to a developer who was like, who works at a big publisher, and they were jokingly describing, they either make two types of game. There's a shooty game, and there's a stabby game. But in 90% of context, that's how you're like solving all obstacles. And so like, yeah, I don't know, like maybe a runner. If it's not an endless runner, like a maze runner. Because I guess, so all right, I'm going to go with that, maze runner, in terms of...
oh, yeah, I can see that.
I do tend to describe like Metroidvania as labyrinths, and there is, you do, you're side-scrolling 90% of the time. And instead of being an infinite runner, it's you're trapped in this weird, hellish hall of mirrors. All right, so I flunked that assignment, but...
No.
You did great.
That was actually not bad, because when I think of a Metroidvania... one of the first things that comes to my mind is an image of squares. And like, here's a bunch of blue squares, and there's a red square down there, and there's a square that's not filled in because I couldn't get to that square yet. So yeah, no, Maze Runner makes a lot of sense.
Also, I guess, I don't know if copyrighted by Hollywood at this point. So, moral of the story, if you just sandbag long enough, you'll eventually come up with something good.
we should do a call to arms here. Tell us. If you listen to the podcast, we'll do the podcast post. But come in there and tell us which of the three you prefer. Pathfinder,
I forgot my wallet like.
I forgot my wallet like. Or Maze Runner. Tell us.
And you have been listening to Kotaku's Split Screen Podcast. You can reach us via email at splitscreen@kotaku.com. And on Twitter, I am... at Ethan Gatch, ETHANGACH. Lisa Marie is at Lisa Marie. God, what's that symbol?
Underscore.
Underscore.
Underscore Lynn. Or Michael Fahey at Uncle Fahey.
Uncle Fahey.
Our producer is Michaela Heck, and our sound engineer is Ryan Allen.
Do you like lemons? Because lemons are delicious. This break is brought to you by lemons.
When life gives you sea lemons, make lemonade.
Or just stockpile lemons.
I feel like they'd go bad.
Probably would go bad. Well, never mind this whole commercial.